on this episode of Conspiracy Realist.
He thought of the schematics for a fried chicken vending machine.
Gas station egg, you can't put that. That's, no.
They made tiny little bombs of napalm, and they attached them to the bats.
Is that an actual thing that happened?
Acoustic Kitty's first mission was to eavesdrop on two men in a park near the Soviet embassy in D.C.
That's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Welcome back, YouTube, and all that inhabit the world, which is, oh, like three people. I just ran up a flight of stairs. That's why I'm breathing like this. Just kidding. That was my impression of somebody who was going up the stairs. Was it good or was it terrible? I know. It was terrible. Welcome back to Conspiracy Realists, where, man, we are certainly talking about conspiracies, that's for sure.
We are. That is what we do. That is who we are.
That's who we are. That's everything about me.
Anyway, today's story starts in June 1940, or the Roaring Forties. We're coming out of the Great Depression, getting into the World War II. In June of 1940, the United States formed something called the National Defense Research Committee, which was led by a man named Dr. Vannevar Bush, the former dean of the MIT School of Engineering and NASA's predecessor, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics.
Why am I imagining this guy looks like Dr. Doom?
Well, that's, yeah, because Vannevar is not a good first name. It's like a villainous name, right?
Well, then his last name's just Bush.
Right, which is also not a good last name, so.
No.
And I don't actually know if he has any relation to the president's Bush.
Well, it's a pretty popular last name, and some, well, how's it spelled?
It's B-U-S-H. Yeah, like the plant, not like the beer.
All right. Well, I guess irrelevant. Continue.
Yeah, anyway, the NDR's goal, NDC, NDC, NDR, what is it? NDRC. The NDRC's goal was, quote unquote, to coordinate, supervise, and conduct research on the problems underlying the development, production, and use of mechanisms and devices of war. And then a year later, they were renamed the Office of Scientific Research and Development, the OSRD. And along with that rename, they expanded their ability to operate because the OSRD took, according to Wikipedia's description, basic American scientific research and essentially carried it through the developmental stage if they deemed it worthwhile. So sometimes this would be like internal ideas, you know, they'd have like a pitch meeting and someone would throw out an idea and then they would go forward with that. Or sometimes they would even take the ideas that American citizens would send them in letters. So you could literally just write the OSRD and be like, hey, I have this idea for a weapon of mass destruction. What do you guys think?
And hamster rifle.
Okay. You say that, but that's really not that out of the range of sort of what we're going to be talking about today. And also, okay, so I do want to do a disclaimer. Normally we come into this podcast with stuff that's, it's a conspiracy theory, right? So it's not proven. There's maybe some evidence and backbending to get to where we are. Everything in this episode is true. It's all based on official government documents. They're just canned projects that never came to fruition.
So they were ideas that were in the works and they're like, better not.
Yeah, pretty much. They are, I guess, technically conspiracies. Well, and some of them are theories that never made it to the development stage, but some of them did make it to the testing stage, like this one. So the OSRD was taking American scientific research from citizens, and this is where our first character comes in.
Oh boy.
His name was Dr. Lytle Adams, L-Y-T-L-E Adams, Lytle. He was a dental surgeon from the familiar town of Irwin, PA. While listening to the radio on vacation in New Mexico, Dr. Lytle Adams heard of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, and the gears in his brain started turning, thinking of ways for the United States to get revenge. And it wasn't the first time he thought of a new invention.
Oh, yeah, regularly. He was an idea guy.
Yeah, yes, he was an idea guy. He's, I wouldn't call him an inventor, but he would have done well on Shark Tank, I think.
Okay,
He actually got a patent for one.
Oh.
And there was an air mail system to expedite mail delivery from ship to ship, ship to shore, and then shore to ship, which doesn't sound amazing compared to what we have now, but at the time it shaved a few hours off of the delivery of letters, which mattered a bit. Yeah. One he did not get a patent for, but was arguably his greatest idea, he thought of the schematics for a fried chicken vending machine.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And can you imagine? You go up to one machine, you get your Coke Zero. Right next to it, you get your fried chicken. I mean, I would posthumously award this man a Nobel Peace Prize because that is, it's everything I've ever wanted.
He was onto something huge. That is huge. If, oh man. And then, yeah, like people would be like, ew, you're eating that vending machine fried chicken. But then there'd just be the guys like, hey, going wrong with your tribe.
It's the same reaction you get when you buy a hot dog at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, ugh, yep. Ew. And then you're like, try it. It kind of slaps. You know what? It's pretty good.
Would I eat it every day? No, but here we are.
Didn't you used to get those packaged eggs from Smithfield News?
No,
they always had them. They had like little pre-packaged, vacuum sealed, like hard-boiled eggs.
Ugh, no thanks.
I swear you bought one once.
I probably bought one once. Sometimes you just be craving a hard-boiled egg. I don't hate HB eggs.
That's fair. It does seem weird to buy a pre-made HB egg from a gas station.
Egg. It's just gas station egg. You can't put that. That's,
well, and it wasn't even a gas station. It was just a corner shop below an adult mart. So it's like, you know.
Right.
It's,
yeah, it wasn't even really a. So an egg from that is absolutely. That's like the sketchiest possible egg you could. Right.
Because you don't even know if it's a chicken egg or it could have been like a human egg.
Why are we talking about eggs?
Oh, we're talking about the fried chicken vending
machine. Oh, the fried chicken vending. What came first, fried chicken vending machine or the gas station egg? That's the real question.
Oh, yeah. You take the gas station eggs and you put them in a vending machine and they come out as fried chicken.
You incubate them.
Yeah.
Genius. Yeah. What was his name?
It was Lytle Adams, or maybe Little. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, Lytle.
I don't know. It could be Little.
He had a widow idea. He had a little idea.
He had a widow idea.
Got it to be pretty big.
He was a widow Adams with the widow.
Adams.
And I'm going to shoot myself after this. Dadams.
Dadams. Oh, Dadams, come hither. Where's my pony, Dadams?
Stop calling me that. We're not even British.
Anyway. So that was his only. So
yeah.
He just made the fried vending machine idea.
Well, he did
the fried vending machine, the fried chicken vending machine.
Well, no. So he had that, and then he had the airmail system, and that was the one he actually got a patent for.
Oh, yeah. So that was a legit thing.
Right. Yeah. The fried chicken thing was just a concept, and then he always, he was a dentist, but he was always kind of thinking of new stuff. So on his way home from New Mexico, he and his family stopped at the Carlsbad Caverns in California, which is home to the world's largest bat colony. And after that, an idea just kind of, you know, like when you have like a shower thought or just like a sudden burst of or like an idea just comes to you.
Yeah.
So that happened to him, and he immediately wrote a letter, and it wasn't even to the OSRD. He wrote it directly to the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
He said, Franklin has to hear
this. He said, Frankie boy.
Mr. Roosevelt, this is so... Mr. President, you need to know this from me personally. Lay it on me.
He had met Eleanor Roosevelt before, so he kind of had an
in more than most people, I guess. Yeah.
He wrote this letter directly to Franklin D. Roosevelt. And I have the exact text of that here.
Oh, no.
He said, "I attach hereto a proposal designed to frighten, demoralize, and excite the prejudices of the people of the Japanese Empire." In his proposal, he denounced bats as the lowest form of animal life, saying that until now, reasons for its creation have remained unexplained, and then ultimately determined that bats were created by God to await this hour and play their part in the scheme of free human existence and to frustrate any attempt of those who dare desecrate our way of life. Ooh. So this was his response to the bombing of Pearl Harbor. He heard about Pearl Harbor on the radio and then said, "F bats, gotta write up FDR."
So this wasn't even an invention or an idea. He just said, "Hey, it's bats."
Well, that was just the introduction. That was just the intro. It was his.
Okay. But he's saying bats are shit, or he's saying bats.
Pretty much. That was his, that was his hook.
Okay.
The actual plan in his mind was, it basically went like this. The United States is home to millions of bats. Japan is primarily built of towns made of paper and wood, and bats love to fly into attics, nooks, and crannies. So because Japanese houses are made of wood and paper, they're highly flammable. So if we attach bombs to bats and let them loose in Japan, we win the war.
I mean, no, but I mean, it wouldn't be like, you wouldn't accomplish nothing with some bats.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the end all be all, but my favorite part of this is he writes this letter.
So they
writes this letter to FDR, the American president, and President Roosevelt's response was, "This man is not a nut. It sounds like a perfectly wild idea, but it's worth looking into."
Roosevelt said so. I mean, just the basis of it. He made a whole thesis statement, introductory paragraph, just to establish, in case it wasn't known yet, that bats are shit. They suck. They have no purpose on planet Earth. But the purpose that they actually do have that has just been unlocked this specific time, specifically to me, was that they are just a medium for bombs. It could be anything, right. But we're going to use bats because they don't have a purpose otherwise. So we might as well blow them fucking up and shit, is what he's saying. They're so useless.
And of all the animals to pick on, he goes, "Bats serve no purpose other than to be blown up." It's like that really.
So he was just walking through that cave. He saw a couple bats and he was like, "Man, fuck those. They serve no purpose. What are they
doing
here?
Stinky. They pooped on me. We should just blow them up along with the Japanese."
And Roosevelt said, "Look into it, boys." And then he got down like a million elevator shafts, and there's just like the secret room. He puts in a code with like his fucking thumb and shit, and he goes in there,
and he's in a wheelchair the whole time, which for some reason makes it funnier. Yeah, in my head, build up.
It takes him longer.
He's like, he has to go down a ramp. They haven't made the handicapped ramps yet, so he's kind of just like, "Somebody carry me down the stairs."
It's awkward because he's in the position of power, but it's still weird for him. Anyways, he gets to the end. And it's just this fucking destroyed, like, auxiliary gym where just bats and bombs are flying, going off everywhere. It's like, it's not working. And out of the fucking rubble, "It's me, the Joyzy Devil. Did you want to put a bomb on me?"
Yeah, that's actually the reason I brought this up. This is the real origin story of the Jersey Devil.
But, I mean, it might as well be.
Yeah, it's not. That's it's
true.
Not. It's
maybe.
Not. But they did put Little because it's funnier. So they put Little Adams in charge of a team.
Wait, who put him in charge? Who put him in charge of anything?
The ORSD or whatever I said earlier, the OSRD.
Oh, I thought you meant the U.S. government.
No, I mean, they're a government agency.
Oh, so they really said, hey, you got something here.
Yeah, they said, hey, come on, Steve Martin from Little Shop of Horrors, you be in charge of this one. And they let him assemble a team and discussed several variables, mostly including what incendiaries they were going to attach to the bats, how to transport the bats, and most importantly,
that was a big one,
what type of bats they would use. And I learned researching this, there are some big f***ing bats out there. I thought the hammerhead bats were big. I thought the f***ing Joyzy Devil was the biggest bat back in the day as a hammerhead bat. There are bigger bats. The largest bat on the planet is the golden-crowned flying fox, which has a wingspan of 6 feet. They're, are you looking it up? They're f***ing big, dude. They're huge. It's terrifying.
Look at those nutsack veins on those wings. I mean, screw a big bat back in the day. This is a big bat f***ing now.
Those are some big f***ing bats. If I woke up in the middle of the night to get a glass of water and I looked out on my patio and I saw that, I would shit myself.
Instant bullet to the head. I'd kill myself if something like that, just knowing like for sure that something like that exists, that's too much. So yeah, I don't want to live on a planet where that's a possibility.
It flying sideways is taller than me by an inch, and I don't like that.
God, that's a dinosaur.
Because that's a big fucking bat. And there, meanwhile, like somehow the same species, same species but a different genus, would be like these little tiny bats that weigh less than an ounce, and somehow they're all the same species. And then Jared Leto f***ing Morbius is the biggest one of them.
He's the biggest one of them all. Ugh, Jersey Devil could kick Morbius's ass. No contest.
Oh, no contest. Yeah, my money goes on the Jersey Devil on that one.
All the way. Come on. All the way. He's from Joyzy. What do you, I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying. He's from Joyzy.
Oh, no.
Oh, what have you done, mate?
What have you done? Is that so? That the bat bombs. Was there anything else, or is it just bat bombs?
Okay, so the bat they eventually landed on was the Mexican free-tailed bat, which is not the most common in the United States, but they're relatively small, lightweight bats, but they can carry up to 18 grams, and there were millions of them in the U.S.
So they're like ants. They can carry.
Yeah. They're the ants of bats.
Yeah, they're not very big at all. They're like bird size. Like regular bird size. Not, I mean, obviously there's many bird sizes, but standard bird size. Yeah,
when you think of a bird. Right.
You're not thinking of a great heron, so shut up.
Yeah, when you think of a bird.
Right. It's bat size. Shut up.
And so they thought, okay, so what kind of bombs are being attached to these things? And luckily for them, a year before this experiment was the invention of napalm, which is incredibly lightweight, and it's like a combination of like gasoline and gelatin.
Oh, wow. I mean, geez.
And so
are they sure they never did this?
Well, okay, hold on. Okay. So they made tiny little bombs of napalm, and they attached them to the bats. And so the only thing they had to figure out still was, how are they going to transport the bats from these caves to the test sites and then eventually to Japan? And they figured out that they could put the bats in refrigerators and artificially force them into a state of hibernation.
The fact that there are people who did this, took the time out of their day to think about this and try it is, I mean, that's crazy. We are going to freeze these bats in refrigerators so that we can transport them to attach bombs to them to send to another country where they will roam freely. We're just kind of letting them go, and the bombs are going to hit something.
Yep. So Adams and his team collected, and this is also insane, they collected 3,500 bats from Carlsbad Taverns. Transported them to a place in the Mojave Desert called Murdoch Dry Lake, hooked them up with napalm cartridges, and then loaded them into a B-52 bomber, which flew to an altitude of 5,000 feet and then they dropped the bats.
They dropped them.
And they made one very crucial error.
Oh, no. Did they drop them over themselves?
They didn't give the bats enough time to wake up, so they just fell. They didn't wake up and start flying. They just fell straight to their death and then blew up.
So it was just napalm. It was just, they're just bombs.
So it was just like a napalm bomb, or a napalm bomb, not balm. But yeah,
there were some bats like there.
Bat guts and fire. And luckily, there weren't any military officials present at that test, so they got to do a second one. And they moved their operation to an Army Air Force base in Carlsbad.
Perfect.
Really close to where the caves were, where they were getting the bats. And they still put the bats in artificial hibernation, but because they didn't have to travel as far and the bats weren't hibernating as long, the team had a little bit more control over the experiment. So this time, they dropped the bats, and the bats did wake up, except this time, they woke up too soon. And a ton of them escaped before they could be put on the B-52 bomber. But of course, they'd already armed them with incendiary devices. So they'd set up a fake Japanese village, and a lot of the bats actually did fly into the village, into the crevices of the houses they'd set up, and then blew up and burned the village to ashes.
Well, sure.
But some of the bats flew back towards the airfield. And the hangars. And the control tower. And the barracks.
Come on, guys. Come on, guys.
And the Air Force general in charge of the base didn't know what the team was doing. And they hadn't brought a fire crew along with them because they were afraid it would make it seem too obvious. So they all just had to stand there and watch the base burn down.
Is that an actual thing that happened?
This is 100% factual.
Okay, so it's not like a list of things that people say, hey, this did, like, these are the conspiracies. These are things that never made it to fruition, but they were actual things.
Right. There were government projects that were in development but got
canceled. This is all what I guess this the government documents on these things have been released to public information.
This is why it got canceled. But the crazier thing is that there was a Marine officer at that second test on the base. And even though the project went horribly wrong and burned down the entire military base, he still thought it was a pretty good idea. And so even though Little Adams and his team canceled the project immediately afterwards, that officer in the Navy picked it up and continued to research it.
No way.
And they ended up spending about $2 million, which if you adjust for inflation, would be about $30 million today on research before the project.
This was the 1940s.
Yeah, it was 1940s, so $2 million in the 1940s. And they canceled the project because the atom bomb came into existence.
Oh, wait, we got something better, guys. Hold the bats.
That's exactly what they were like. Like, I know we've sunk a lot of money into this thing, but check it out. We've got a big atom bomb. And then someone probably was like, well, what are we going to do with all these fucking bats? You fucking kidding me? Do you know how much fucking pizza pie we had to make to feed all these fucking bats? And then one bat just goes, follow me, my fucking brothers. We will fly back to New Jersey.
And that's why New Jersey's a piece of shit, because all the bat bombs went off there. Just kidding. We love
Jersey.
And
that's why it actually used to be called the Pine Blossoms. And then all the bats showed up and blew it to smithereens. And now it's the Pine Barrens. And there's one survivor among their ranks. He stands tall with a wingspan of several feet and a horse face so ugly it will make your fall off. The Joysy Devil coming to a theater near you and in a theater near you because he's a sex criminal.
It's not funny, seriously.
It's not funny. It's a serious offense.
And he is addicted to crack cocaine.
Which might actually be the root of all the other problems.
Yeah, it might start and end there.
Addiction's a serious issue, but when you're a hammerhead bat, you're not treated the same.
It's true.
It's true. It's unfortunate, but it's true. And it's, well, that's just, it's the cost of being a Joisey boy. It's just a, it's a Joisey
thing. It's a Joisey thing. If you don't understand it, you don't understand it. I don't know what to tell you.
It's a Joisey thing.
It's a Joisey thing, you know?
Yeah, that is only one of the abandoned government experiments.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Well, just get ready for Operation Monopoly.
Oh, no.
In late 1977, the Soviet Union began building a new embassy in D.C., and U.S. intelligence worried that because the embassy was being built on Mount Alto, the second highest point in Washington, that Soviets would have an ideal location for eavesdropping on radio communications. It was possible that through intercepting microwaves, they could listen in on telephone calls from the White House, State Department, the Pentagon, and the CIA. So the FBI came up with a plan to bug the new embassy by digging a tunnel underneath it, where they would install eavesdropping equipment, allowing them to spy on the embassy, believing that it would give them access to Soviet intelligence and information on whether the Soviets were eavesdropping on Americans.
So they were eavesdropping on them to see if they were eavesdropping.
Exactly. The FBI purchased a home directly across the street from the Soviet embassy to set up their operation, and they started digging a tunnel that would connect the basement of that house to the Soviet embassy.
No way.
Oh, and of course, it did not go to plan.
Jesus.
There were a ton of leaks and technical issues. And even when they got to the embassy, they realized that they knew next to nothing about the embassy's layout.
Dig first, ask questions later.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it was. And FBI Assistant Director John F. Lewis has said that the tunnel produced, quote unquote, no information of any kind.
They just did it. You guys want to dig a hole?
Pretty much. And then they found out later in 2001 that a double agent named Robert Hansen had already told the Soviets about the tunnel. So it did not matter.
Amazing. They tried.
Yeah, I mean, hey, they tried. So my main motivation for this was really to figure out where our tax dollars are going, because it's obviously not going to public infrastructure.
Guys, we can still put bombs on these bats.
Next up, my favorite of all the cases is this next one.
Oh, no.
And this is the official name of it. It's Project Acoustic Kitty.
Go on.
Acoustic Kitty was a CIA project in the 1960s, which sought to use cats to spy on the Kremlin and Soviet embassies. The CIA realized microphone technology at the time was bad at filtering out background noise, so all of their recordings had ambient sound that distracted them from the conversation at hand. They basically wanted to recreate the part of the ear known as the cochlea. It's a, it's like a small part of your ear lined with really tiny hairs that pick up on vibrations. Think of it as like a depth of field.
Oh, okay.
For your ear, like how a camera will focus on something, your ear kind of does the same thing with sound.
That makes sense. I feel like I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the cochlea is the part responsible for that. So rather than investing in making microphones better, the CIA figured they could just experiment on animals.
Oh.
And Frankenstein it. And so they went through this whole list of like, okay, well, we can't use dogs because dogs are too big and obvious, and we can't use this because whatever. So somehow they eventually landed on cats. They decided cats were the least conspicuous animal because they kind of just roam around. It's not out of place to just see a cat hanging out somewhere.
That's true.
So they found some cats. And then in an hour-long procedure, a veterinary surgeon implanted a microphone in the cat's ear canal. A small radio transmitter at the base of its skull, the part where you would like pick up the cat, like the fat in the back of its neck.
Scruff.
Yes, it's scruff. They put a transmitter there and then ran a thin wire into its fur and realized, oh shit, cats are not that obedient. And it's not doing what we want it to do. despite their best efforts to train this cat, when it got hungry, it would go off in search of food. So they had to perform a second operation to remove the cat's desire for food.
Oh, my God.
Which is, I think, at this point, crossing into the inhumane. And the point of having that vet there originally was to figure out how to humanely rig this cat up to be a living microphone. And then they, at some point, just said, f*** it.
What was the point?
Well, I think the point was to send it into the Soviet embassy and have
pick up on shit.
Like, yeah, have it listen in on what they were saying.
So this goes in line with the last one about the whole, they were real pressed about the Soviet embassy.
They were, it's all kind of along the same line. Like a lot of weird stuff happened during the Cold War that we don't like to talk about.
That's fair.
But surprisingly, that second operation was successful and they installed in the cat the microphone and removed its desire for food. So they were all prepared to do a field test. Acoustic Kitty's first mission was to eavesdrop on two men in a park near the Soviet embassy in DC. So CIA operatives deployed Acoustic Kitty and sat watching in anticipation as it set off on its course exactly as planned, directly towards the two men sitting on the bench. And then it was immediately hit by a bus.
Guys, it worked. It worked.
Exactly what it was. They're on the wrong side.
They're on the
opposite side of the street from the base. They put the cat down and they're like, there he goes. He's going straight for him. I forgot to factor it in traffic from the other side of the street.
That is... Oh,
they canceled the project after that.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, hey, it was walking directly towards the Russians, so we got kind of got somewhere with it. But the next abandoned government project I have was officially titled Project A-111-19, or wait, A-111-9. But was also referred to as a study of lunar research flights. It was a secret plan devised by the United States Air Force. Basically, they were disheartened after the Soviets took the lead in the space race after the launch of Sputnik, and then even more upset by the failure of the US's attempts to launch their own satellite in space during a project called Project Vanguard. So military and government officials were growing desperate, and the unofficial name for this project is Project Nuke the Moon.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, pretty self-explanatory. The main objective of the project was to cause a nuclear explosion on the moon that would be visible from Earth, and the intended hope was that such a display would boost the morale of the American people.
That would be a nightmare. That would be like the end of times.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like to see a nuke on the moon from any country. I think I'd actually be more upset to see it from the country I lived in.
Yeah.
But around the same time, newspapers have been spreading rumors that the Soviets were planning basically to do the same thing. They were planning to detonate their own hydrogen bomb on the moon. And this was reported by an anonymous source who had allegedly told a Secret Service agent that the Soviets were planning to commemorate the anniversary of the October Revolution by nuking the moon during a lunar eclipse on November 7th. And the same papers also reported that a failure to hit the moon would result in the nuclear missile coming back to Earth. So, based on this information, the Air Force did cancel the project in January of 1959, citing that they didn't want to put the population at risk. But then the leader of the project, a guy named Leonard Riefel, also said that they didn't want to risk a nuclear fallout on the moon because that could potentially affect future lunar research or potential lunar colonization.
I'm sorry, Leonard or Leonard?
Oh, no, it would be Leonard.
I just didn't know if the way it was spelled was like making it so that you said it.
No, it's just Leonard.
Ah, yes, Leonard. Leonard, hold the O.
Leonard, I can't believe I said Leonard. So, clearly it's Leonard.
What can you do?
So after the fact, we did find evidence that the Soviets were working on a similar idea. They also intended to nuke the moon, but the official documentation says the research started in 1958, which would have made it the same year that the U.S. started doing it, despite the fact that newspapers said Soviets started doing it in 1957. So it's borderline conspiratorial, because it's like the rumor might have spread at the same time, prompting both nations to invest in that research.
Yeah, which is super interesting. It was just a big pissing contest.
That's really all it was. And the end result was that just that the U.S. decided that landing on the moon would be more impressive than nuking it. And that is probably genuinely the only thing that stopped them from doing it. I think they were going to nuke the moon up until someone went, wait.
That's crazy.
What if we just got there first?
We gotta blow this fucking thing up.
Literally up until the point they were like, if we do it first, it'll be cool. And then someone was like, oh, or we could land on the moon. And they were like, oh, that would be cooler. Go on. And then I bet you someone at that meeting went, yeah. It would be like, I don't know. It'd be like a small step for man, but like a giant leap for mankind. And someone went, write that fucking down. Write that the fuck down. Send that to fucking Stanley Kubrick. I want that to be in the movie adaptation.
And then they nuked the moon and then had Kubrick film
fake moon landing. Yeah, moon landing. Exactly. Yep. Right.
Because they blew it up.
Yeah.
They went, shit. I didn't think the whole thing would blow up.
And now they just project an image of the moon onto the sky every night.
Out of one of those old classroom projectors where it would like show the paper like transparent brown.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to take a picture of the moon on your iPhone and then wondered why does it turn out so blurry? It's just because iPhone cameras are better than our eyes, and it's actually accurately capturing the moon, whereas our eyes will kind of adjust for the blurriness of the moon and just form it into a circle. iPhone cameras are so advanced, they'll pick up on the fact that the moon is not an actual circle, and it's just a projected image. So how can mirrors be real if our eyes aren't real?
Exactly. Beautifully put.
Thank you. Now, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth. I've got one more for you. I've got one more abandoned.
Oh boy.
Operation Fantasia, and it takes place around the same time as the bat bombs, right after Pearl Harbor. But it's intelligence officer Wild Bill Donovan told his scientists at the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, that they needed to find a way to outfox the Axis powers. And one OSS member named Ed Salinger was a psychological warfare strategist who had run an import-export business in Tokyo before the war. Because of his frequent dealings with the Japanese, he learned the language, collected Japanese art, and studied Japanese superstitions, which led to the OSS hiring him in 1944. Salinger pitched his idea, which he called Operation Fantasia, saying it would destroy Japanese morale. In a memo, he wrote, "Foundation for the proposal rests upon the fact that the modern Japanese is subject to superstitious beliefs in evil spirits and unnatural manifestations which can be provoked and stimulated." And so he basically ruled with this very racist idea that Japan in the 1940s was so gullible and superstitious that they still believed in like all the yokai that existed in folklore.
So they were going to try to make fake yokai to scare them.
Exactly. He picked one yokai in particular. He said that the Japanese were particularly scared of the kitsune, which are fox-shaped yokai who were invented during the Shinto era as harbingers of doom. And under his guidance, the OSS made fox-shaped balloons, which they were going to fly over Japanese villages. And then to accompany the balloons, they asked a U.S. whistle manufacturer to make whistles that simulated fox cries.
Ah,
balloons!
Yeah, so that was the idea. They were going to send out balloons and then have people sit around with whistles. And in another memo, Salinger wrote, "These whistles can be used in combat, and a sufficient number of these should create an eerie sound of the kind calculated to meet Japanese superstition." The OSS, at that point in time, had also hired another company to create artificial fox odors, which Salinger said the Japanese would recognize and cower in fear at the scent of. Like, they would just
smell
the fox scent and then just crumple. And cower in fear. But ultimately, the OSS, they never got it quite right. And so they bailed on their plan and went with Salinger's other idea, which was to catch live foxes in China and Australia and spray paint them.
So that they might think.
And then just set them loose in Japanese villages. And then they had to ask themselves, oh, what kind of paint are we going to use? And thankfully, the United States Radium Corporation suggested using glow-in-the-dark paint, which, oh my god, shocker, contained radium.
Oh my god.
And before deploying these radiated glowing foxes in Japan, the OSS did a test where they released 30 paint-covered foxes in a park in D.C. to see if they could scare American citizens, pretty much operating under the assumption that if they could scare Americans, they could scare the Japanese. And it actually worked. They released the foxes in the woods, and there were several reports of people calling the police reporting ghost-like animals emerging from the woods. And, I mean, hey, it was effective. But then they had another hurdle, which was, how are they going to get the foxes to Japan? Their original idea was that they were just going to drop the foxes in the ocean and have them swim ashore, but then they realized that the paint would wear off, so they had to drop the foxes on land. Then the next issue they faced was, shit, nobody's ever trained foxes, so what's going to stop them from fleeing if guns are fired at them?
Oh my god.
And luckily, Salinger had an answer to this one. He said, if enough foxes are released, some will get through. So his method was just release a shit ton of them, cross your fingers. But recent discoveries of his other memos have revealed alternative plans. He also explained a Japanese folk legend that told of a fox bearing death's crown on its head. And so he commissioned for a stuffed fox to be made, and then attached a human skull to the head of the fox and wired up its mouth with a mechanism to make it look like it was talking. So he made a Muppet, and then he said, that's not enough. What if we cover that stuffed fox's body in a black cloth and then paint it with glowing bones and flew it on a kite?
Did they take that one to Japan?
They did not. None of these made it to Japan. But when he was confronted on that one, he came up with a final idea, which is, okay, let's find ally-sympathetic Japanese people and ask them to behave as if they were possessed by fox spirits. And so the final idea was just to have a bunch of Japanese people run around making weird noises and acting like they were possessed by evil fox spirits to disorient the axis of the Japanese.
Guys, guys, guys. Guys, I don't even.
So, thankfully, none of those ever made it to even the testing stage. Just like,
well, the bats did.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah. The bats made it through two tests, and and a lot of them died, but no foxes were harmed in the making of this podcast. So that's something.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That was a lot to take in.
And We never nuked the moon, so that's good. Also, a cat did get run over, so that did happen. Yeah, that happened. And there are more. There are more than that. Those are just the five that I picked out.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, these are insane. But there are so many government tests that we... And I think the most upsetting thing to me was, oh, that's where my taxes go. They spent $30 million on bat bombs.
$30 million! You can't just drop $30 million on bat bombs.
And some of those bats literally just got dropped. Like, they just fell and blew up.
At least 3,500, at least 3,500 bats just dropped to their deaths.
Yeah, and they just went right out.
We're going to need another 3,500 bats.
And then those bats also died and destroyed a military base, which cost money. So,
well, I guess that was the bat saying, no. You're going down with us.
Kudos to the bats. They earned their revenge on that one.
Absolutely.
I guess the big concern is, when are the foxes coming back for theirs? Because radium-laced glow-in-the-dark paint is probably not good for you.
Probably not. If I were to take a guess, I'd probably say not good for you.
Which is why we've had to pull the bathwater from the site. Because we thought it would be more attractive to sell sparkly pink bathwater, so we did spray it with radium laced spray paint, and then we were warned by the FCC and the FDA that we couldn't do that.
It was an oversight, and we're sorry for it. But what can you do? You know, live and learn. Suck it up.
It happened. So I do want to say, if you've already bought some, there's nothing to be concerned about.
No, you're fine.
They ruled that it was like non-lethal in small amounts, less than 1 ounce. So as long as you follow the instructions on the bottle and temper yourself, you're fine.
Right.
I mean, if you
didn't, you got no one to blame but yourself. But.
Right. If you're listening to this and you have some sitting around, I would just recommend throwing it out or
chug it.
Yeah, chug it or chug it. It depends what your angle is, I guess. And also, I remember what I wanted to talk about. If y'all want to join the motherfucking Conspiracy Realist Book Club.
Oh, yeah.
I picked up recently a copy of Mark Booth's The Secret History of the World. And Nick found a copy of The Illustrated History of the World.
Yeah. They illustrated it.
But, if the listeners want to tune in, if y'all want to pick up the book, I won't recommend it because we don't get a commission on that. But I'm sure eventually it'll come up as an episode. So if you want to be tuned into that, or I don't know, if you guys want to pay us like $5 a month on Patreon to read books with you, oh, that would be...
I'd read a book.
That'd be pretty cool. Like,
I'd read a book.
I'd read a book. I'd read a book for five bucks a month. I'd read a book. But you know, no pressure. This is like we're putting the feelers out. You know, we're putting out the feelers out there. So let us know if that's a thing you'd want. We could also do a book club, conspiracy book club. I think that would be pretty dope.
And maybe I could show everyone my penis. Sorry.
If you all want to see Nick's penis, just pay $2.50 a month on
$5
Patreon. $7.50. It's the
25 cents.
Okay,
25 cents. Take it or leave it.
Okay, it depends how close up you want the photos, because phones take macro photos now, so we could get real veiny. Transylvania. Know what I'm saying? Anyways, humans, thanks for listening to this episode of Conspiracy Realist. If you enjoyed it, give us the old like ski on TikTok at Conspiracy Realist, where you have probably seen us before, or on Instagram at The Conspiracy Realist, or on Twitter at Realists Pod. Yes, They're all different. But the more followers we get, the more pull we have in negotiating with social media platforms to get consistent naming rights across all of them. So, you know, even if you don't like the show, but that kind of thing bothers you, the inconsistency, and you just, you want us to just be the same everywhere, I would suggest leaving a 5-star rating. That would be my recommendation.
You know. Yeah. Take 2 seconds. What's it going
to
mean?
Yeah, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It does you no harm to give us 5 stars, right? And it helps us out. But if you give us 1 star, it still doesn't affect you, but it hurts us. So do you really want to be that person?
Do you really want to give us 1 star? One measly little star? That's all we get?
I mean, give us...
Come on, one.
Give us at least...
You can't be that bad, guys.
Give us at least 2. There's a little bit of effort.
Guys, 1 star.
A little bit
on.
Of effort. I mean, that deserves at least
I
2 stars.
1 star every time. I rate this podcast 1 star every week. It's me, the author of all your pain.
The author of all my pain. Yeah, when I've had to make so many Apple accounts to get our Apple podcast listing up to, just to get us up to 3 stars. I've had to make so many. I have 30 accounts rating us 1 star on every platform. I mean, 5. What's good? What's the good one?
1 star.
What's the good one? Take that and then double it by 5. And that's how many accounts I have giving us good ratings. For
one.
Yeah, I have 1 account giving us good ratings. 5 accounts, that's bad. I'm actively rooting against us because then...
No, you got to stay humble. You got to work for something, you know.
Anyway, the music, the outro music, probably. You probably finished up right now. But anyway, hey, thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with another something. It'll be something.
It'll be something.
It'll be something. Sure. That's for sure. Keep on hanging on. Keep on f***ing those Mongolian death worms. They don't stop. They f***ing love it too. They f***ing love it. They say they don't.
Seriously, don't stop.
But
you have a quota and you need to reach it.
Yeah, they say they don't love it, but that's just a translation error. They love it. So keep on f***ing on.
They love
babies.
It.
Checkmate, bitch.
Checkmate, bitch.